The kitchen's a laboratory, and everything that happens there has to do something with science. It's biology, chemistry, physics. Yes, there is history. Yes, there is artistry. Yes to all of that. But what happens there, what actually happens to the food, is all science. Hi, my name is Ajay Sharma, and I welcome you all to the fresh episode of Bite In with Bavarchi Season 2. On today's episode, talking about science, I have someone with me who's been around science and food almost all his life. He's my dearest friend. He's an AOS graduate in Culinary Arts and currently a bachelor's degree candidate, Culinary Science Program at the CIA, Mr. Abhijeet Kamath.
Hey, Ajay.
Thank you, Abhijeet. Thank you for accepting my invite for being the guest on my podcast. It's an absolute honor to have you, and let's talk science with you.
Sure, let's do this.
Okay, so Abhijeet, as I mentioned that you are a culinary science student, and you are a chef or you are a scientist? How should I address you today?
Honestly, I don't call myself a chef. Chef is a really generic term, per se. Out there, plus you have to earn that title. That's like overused quite some time. And actually, you overused a lot of times, actually. So, you can call me Cook Abhijeet, or even just Abe, for that matter. I usually don't like prefer titles, but just Abe or Abhijeet is fine.
Okay, I'll address you Abhijeet today.
Okay, that's perfect.
So, Abhijeet, you have been around science for quite a while now. It's been 2 years since you have been pursuing your bachelor's degree in culinary science. And a couple of days ago, I had one of your colleagues. She was also a culinary science student. And she told me how you guys perform different experiments with the food in the lab, and she told that there is a gel that does not melt, and there are many types of liquids that change the shapes. So that what fantasized me about science, and that made me so curious that okay, what I see food is just beyond what we actually cook. There's much more to that, right? There is a long way process of cooking it. So today I'll be hitting you with some questions about science. I hope you don't mind.
No,
it can
absolutely.
Go dirty. It can go as deep as it can be.
ask me anything.
Okay, so starting with the first question of the interview, since you belong to a Maharashtrian mixed Kannadiga family, tell us about this mixed culture childhood, and how you were brought up in such a mixed culture. How did your love for food happen, and some food memories about?
Okay, so I'll address the first question first.
Okay.
So yes, I'm from Maharashtra, but I was born in Karnataka in a town called Kumta, and Kamats are from the Konkan area of India. So that includes Maharashtra, Goa, Karnataka. My mom was born and raised in Karnataka, and my dad was born in Karnataka but raised as a Maharashtrian in Mumbai. So I come from South Indian roots. I love coconut oil. Our cuisine is basically just South Indian food with obviously some hints of Maharashtrian culture, but it's definitely a mix of both, but overwhelming exposure of South Indian influence. So the second question, where the love food came out, was actually from watching my father work in his restaurants, like, just struggle work. He has a very strong work ethic. Just watching him work every day in restaurants. He was front of house, and his passion for, the Kamath restaurants really influenced me tremendously. And at the same time, I have to give credit to my mother for actually influencing the love for food within me. I was raised by her all my life because dad was busy with restaurants, but obviously dad was there as a figurehead, always there to, to back me up with studies. But I'm proud to say that my mom has raised me up from scratch when it comes to my studies, my life, understanding food, understanding myself. So the love for food originated with my mom's cuisine, my mom's cooking, ever since I could understand what goes in my mouth. It's just been South Indian cuisine, Indian cuisine, just the various ingredients found and how different they are in Maharashtra, Mumbai, and in Kumta, and how those ingredients came from my mom's native place to Maharashtra with us. When we would travel, we would take back ingredients from Kumta back to Mumbai and Mumbai to Kumta, and the way our families, you know, fuse these ingredients together, coming up with different recipes, with no classical twist per se, but definitely traditional recipes to feed like 50, 60 people. It's something that genuinely stuck with me all my life, because every year we travel there, and just being a part of it was easy to influence any child, and it influenced me.
So if I come to your house to eat, mm-hmm. what okay. is that one family specialty meal you would feed me? Because I have stayed in South India and Karnataka. Mm-hmm. I've done my bachelor's from Manipal. So I'm somewhere aware about Udupi and Satvik cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to hear it from the actual Karnataka, that what they feed me.
So we don't specialize in like Udupi cuisine. We're definitely mm-hmm. influenced by it. Like we have dosa, idli, sambar, you know it, the whole nine yards. Yeah. But when we think about Konkan cuisine, it's again the three states, Mumbai, Maharashtra, Goa, and Karnataka. Yeah. So think about like fish ambert, teppal, mm-hmm. think about Goan curry, think about your chicken braised or chicken egg curry. All the basic stuff that you find, main ingredients you find in all three states, has definitely mm-hmm. found its way into our cuisine, our Konkan cuisine. So if I were to feed you mm-hmm. something that's close to my heart, something that really influenced me through my mom's cooking, and even my grandmom's cooking for that matter, I would definitely feed you Sunday fish fry. And that's something that's really dear to me, something I miss while I'm at the CIA, something I always yearn for. It's a whole fish. So think about mackerel, think about snapper, think about kingfish, whole fish that's been marinated in a chili, a red chili paste overnight with some garlic, hing or whatever, and then it's taken out and then covered in rava or semolina and then fried over a traditional tawa with coconut oil. Obviously everything has to have coconut oil, and that is served alongside shellfish curry, and that's teppal ambert or shellfish curry. Basically it's like an orangish coconut gravy which is made with not coconut milk but the endosperm of the young coconut that you find in Karnataka, and that is something I have to feed you, and I will feed you if you ever decide to join us for lunch.
I'm making my itinerary to India now, and Karnataka is certainly my place to visit.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, so talking about your love for food, you must be having mm-hmm. some food memories, right, from your childhood or from your mm-hmm. young era.
Yep.
So what is that one particular memory that has engraved into your heart for the lifetime?
So again, that it's usually every Sunday a family of four sit together and have that one meal before dad moves on to work, and then mom goes on to her work at the yoga studio. By 12, dad would bring in the fish from the market, and he would get whole fish, like the entire carcass of fish. And as a child, I would just pick it up by the tail and just run around the house like, no, clone, don't do that. I'm just like, no, don't cut it open. I just want to like save it, no. And then I would eat it again 1 hour later. So just being part of that, and just remembering all those memories, like how that cuisine and that time of day brought an entire family together, a busy family together, to enjoy our company, to enjoy each other's food, enjoy each other's lives, really stuck with me. And it continued on for like 26 years, actually 23 years, but because I then came to CIA. But whenever I go back, we have that tradition that every Sunday we sit together and we make sure that food memory continues on with all the family members. No matter how busy you are, no matter where you are, we will all sit together with fish fry, with fish ambert, or with the best cooked rice ever. Best seasoned rice, actually. Best cooked and seasoned rice and papad.
Okay. So since you have so many memories with the food mm-hmm. and you have an intense love for food, it's obvious mm-hmm. that you chose to be in the food line.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you graduated in as an hospitality professional back in India.
Correct.
And then you moved on to CIA to pursue your culinary arts degree and now further into the culinary science program.
Yes.
So tell us about your whole journey from India to CIA, how the whole thing happened, and you know, what was the difference you faced and what were the challenges you faced moving out from your place in India, moving away from your family thousands of miles to a new culture and to a new environment.
Sure. So I was never going to do hotel management. I come from a family like doctors, engineers, lawyers, you know, the basic Indian careers that you find back in India. So for me, out of 10th grade, in 11th, I was contemplating about, you know, should I do what everyone else is doing, or should I do something that I want to take up as playtime, or something that I don't want to work for, something I have a passion for, or a hobby per se. And in 12th, I realized that commerce isn't my thing. Science isn't really my thing. When it comes to like the basic science spectrum, isn't my thing. Cooking is my thing. Food is definitely in my zone. And looking back at my food memories, looking back at what made me happy and what potentially could make me happy was food. And the only option back then, or the most reliable option back then, was IHM, or Institute of Hotel Management, Mumbai. And I just decided that if I have to be influenced by food, it has to be through, if I have to take food as a career, I definitely have to take IHM Mumbai. And IHM Mumbai offered, like, you know, four departments of hotel, teaching hospitality, teaching about the hotel industry, front of house, back of house, the restaurants or the kitchen, housekeeping. And after that, the 3-4 years over there just influenced me heavily in kitchens. Like, you know, we would just cook thrice a week, and nothing else kept me going. It was just those kitchen days with our chefs. And after that, one of my most influential chefs, Chef Vernon Coelho, he told me, like, you know, what do you want to do with your life in my last year? And I told him I want to go to CIA. I want to, you know, cook further. I want to cook more. I want to do more with food. And he was like, before you do anything, take up a job. So that really stuck with me. And I also worked for Sassy Spoon with Irfan Pabane. I worked for the Bombay Canteen with Thomas Zacharias. And I was working for 2 years before I came to CIA. And that also showed me what European cuisine is as an Indian's perspective in Sassy Spoon, and what classic Indian cuisine is from all around India in Bombay Canteen. And it just made my mind that I was just fixated on the fact that this is something I genuinely want to do. It makes me happy. I'm going to take it up regardless of the consequences. And after leaving Bombay Canteen, I took a month. It took actually 3 months to get my applications going at CIA. And I was working for an NGO called Teach for India. And while being influenced by Teach for India as well, I was just cooking at home, you know, just trying to apply what I learned from IHM in the kitchen, what I learned from Sassy Spoon, Bombay Canteen. And that passion still stuck. And that made my decision to join CIA even more resolute. And coming to CIA was definitely an explosion, like a good explosion, not a bad explosion, like different cultures, the different streams of cuisines, the different teaching spectrum. It was something that I genuinely remember, like, was the most influential part of my life at the age of 23, 24. Where coming to a different land, a different culture, it's something I genuinely want people to understand, that you'll be bombarded with different changes, like different things, different itineraries, different perspectives, different opinions, but it all revolves around food. And that is something I want everyone to experience, where we come, what food makes us, how food makes us. And the CIA embedded that in me, that you need to know why you're here, why food is important to you, and how you need to take up food as a career, and what you can do more with food. And after leaving CIA, again, I externed at the restaurant Danielle, which is a 2-Michelin-star restaurant, and I got to work for a year at Gramercy Tavern. After that, which I finally decided to join culinary science, because again, there's always more to food. You can always do so much more in that spectrum. And science was the way for me. And science is something that generally interested me, at least food science. So the culinary science program at the CI seemed interesting and I took it up.
So you talked about Bombay Canteen. Well, I have also been a part of Bombay Canteen. And as you were telling about Chef Thomas and how the environment would have been there, it brought all that nostalgic memories for me as well. Like working with Chef Thomas. And there, I met the co-owner of that restaurant, Chef Floyd Carlos. Oh, God, what a man he was. And then many of my Vaksha seniors were there, Chef Hussain, Chef Shannon, and to name a few. And then, I mean, you know, I think we are brothers separated long way because we have so much in common. I mean, we work in the same restaurant, we have the Karnataka connection in a way. I mean, that's beautiful. I mean, I just say that world is so small. People can meet you anywhere and you'll have so many things in common to talk about. And especially when it comes to food.
Yeah, I mean, it's food that joins, you know, connects lives, connects souls. It's definitely something that brings people together. As Anthony Bourdain would say, you get to know a lot about someone when you share a meal with them, especially when you cook for them and share the same meal with them. It definitely opens up a lot of doors, opens up a lot of avenues. It brings people together. So, yeah.
I mean, the art of food is all about practicing a community. And, you know, sharing. And so you mentioned that you moved out from IHM Mumbai, you worked in Sassy Spoon and Bombay Canteen. And then you flew to America and how your life was gone for a big toss working with legendary Chef Daniel Boulud. So why don't you tell about that working with Chef Daniel Boulud?
Sure. So something about the restaurant, it's a classic French fine dining restaurant in the Upper East Side in New York City. And classic French restaurants are hardcore perfectionists. It's a 2-Michelin-star restaurant. The moment I was there, I was already the lead prep cook. Like, there was no resting. There was no stopping. You had to get stuff together. You had to get your shit together. I would come in like half an hour. If my shift began at 7 o'clock, we would only open for dinner around 5. So we would be there by 11 o'clock to clock in at 12. So we would have a prep list going at 12. I would collect all the prep sheets from other line cooks, see what they need for service. And then me and my team of prep cooks would just like get busy, like, you know, getting perfect cuts, perfect sauces, perfect production cuts. Everything had to be meticulous. Everything had to be elaborate to the centimeter. And then our chef de cuisine would actually check that the dimensions of every cut in order to make sure we were on par with our list. We would actually work for like, I personally was working there for like 70, 75 hours a week. It was hectic. It was amazing. It was one of the best experiences, one of the most influential eye-opening experiences I've had as a line cook, just coming out of CIA, at least for the externship part. And it just made my decision to take it on further even more resolute. So I genuinely ask people to take up a French restaurant or a classic French restaurant to like see what it feels like to come from those restaurants, from that culture, from that perspective, and be influenced in that perspective. You get that sense of urgency when you work in these restaurants. And Daniel Boulud's restaurant, I mean, even I got to start in Cafe Boulud. Everything was as per their elder cousin restaurant. And it's something I genuinely appreciate and I'm thankful for. And if I had a chance to do it over again, I would.
Talking about the restaurant, Daniel, as an extra. So I was going through your Instagram to do your research for the podcast. And I came across a picture on 25th of September, 2017, where you and other chefs, the whole kitchen team, are holding a book called The Chasing Bhukus. What is the story behind that picture?
So Chasing Bhukus was based on the culinary competition Bhukus d'Or, which was made in honor of Paul Bhukus. It was started by Paul Bhukus. And I think in 2016, America won silver. But in 2018, we won gold. And it was the best feeling for Paul Bhukus because he always believed he had American blood in him. And it was the first time America won gold, and we had to celebrate that with a charity event. And it was associated with Brigade, which is a chef, a culinary unit. I got to meet some of the most influential chefs in that one, in that 4-hour window. I got to meet Chef Thomas Keller, who, by the way, is a very down-to-earth chef. I even asked for a stage opportunity at the French Laundry with him. And he didn't ask for an email. He just said, write me a letter, like a handwritten, not a typed letter, a handwritten letter with a blue pen, and mail it to me at the French Laundry, addressing it to me. And I don't remember most of the chefs there because it was like 3 years ago, but that experience, that talk with Chef Thomas Keller was one of the most amazing experiences by far. I don't think I got paid that day. I chose to just go there because I just wanted to be around those chefs and just like bask in their charm, their respect, and just see what it feels like to be under their wing. And even when we had the service going on, each chef was assigned like 2 apps, 2 entrees, 2 desserts. They brought their culture, they brought their sense of urgency, they brought their passion in each dish, on each plate. And just to watch them and just assist them was, again, the best experience ever. And that just showed me how much it takes to, like, you know, follow your passion and to follow your dreams. Don't go after money. Just go after the experience. See what you can find. See what you can get out of it. And any experience is good experience. That was one of the most defining moments of my externship. And that picture is extremely close to me. My colleagues are there from Restaurant Danielle. Other chefs are over there. Oh, Mike Anthony is also there in the picture, and he was my future chef at the Gramercy Tavern. He was there with his sous chef, and yeah, it just shows what a small world it is.
I completely agree. So, you know, Abhijit, I'm going for my extern in the fall after December. I'm done with CIA, and I go head out for my extern. So, since you have already done the externship at Restaurant Danielle, so what is that one piece of advice you would like to give people like me and other people who are going for their externship and choosing their externship sites, and like what should they look into? And
so follow your gut. Like, don't look at the Michelin star tag. Don't look at the name. Don't look at what other people are thinking. Don't look at what the reviews say. If you've starched there and you've had a good time, go for it. Go with your gut. If you think Gramercy Tavern's going to make you happy after your 2 stages, go there. You're going to have a good time. You're still going to learn. You're still going to get an amazing experience. You're going to learn from it regardless. Whichever atmosphere, whichever environment you decide to take up, you're going to learn. And I genuinely want, like, you know, if you're definitely going to try the city, definitely try, and it's your first time working in a restaurant, definitely try classic French restaurants like Restaurant Danielle, The Dynex Group, EMP, Le Bernardin. If that's something that doesn't interest you, try classic French, American French restaurants, or even casual dining restaurants. Do what makes you happy. First stage there, do multiple stages. Why just one? Do multiple stages and see if that makes you happy. Are the people happy there? Do the people over there cook amazing food? Do you want to cook that food? Is that something you want to take up when you work there, or in the future go to another restaurant, or you want to open a restaurant and you want to open, like, work with such food? That is your starting point. And that is something you will take up for the future. So do as many stages as you can. Go with your gut. Follow the food you want to cook. Don't follow the name. That's all I'm saying. And everything will work out.
I'll definitely keep this thing in mind that, you know, the more you experience as a trainee, the more you are likely to get into that particular setup.
Exactly.
Thank you for such a wonderful advice.
Absolutely.
After completing your externship, you came back to your sophomore year of CIA, mm-hmm. and then you graduated with a new degree in culinary arts. Mm-hmm. And then you decided to go for your optional practical training, or OPT,
mm-hmm.
at the Gramercy Tavern.
Mm-hmm.
So how was your life, not as a student anymore, but as a temporary employee? For 1 year.
Well, I had already stodged over there initially in 2017. And the first stodge was an observation stodge, where you stand near the pass. You have three sous chefs at the pass, one expoing, one calling out orders, one working with the team. And you have this entire brigade of cooks just, you know, pantsing around, dedicated, like calling out orders, calling out time, and just watching them cook the entire 3 hour service. They'll give you a chance to like decide, like, is this something you want to do? Is this something you want to cook for? Or just, is this something you want to take up for the next 1 year? And they brought food to me. They brought like sampler plates, and I tried their food. It was one of the best food. One of the best dishes I've ever had so far. And it was an American French representation, obscure casual dining, one Michelin star. And I decided, like, you know, if I ever want to take up OPT, it's going to be at this restaurant. So 2018, my graduation's nearing, and I want to take up a job in the city. The only restaurant that came to mind was Gramercy Tavern. And the second stage I took with them was a work stage, where you work with the team and see if there's a balance, see if people get along with you, your work skills are on par with what Gramercy Tavern is looking for. And once they accept you, you're in, your family. And that experience defined my year at CI, and it defined my year at in the city. Gramercy Tavern is local. It's basically home cooking with upscale niche. Soul food, easy food, but the best food, and perfection on each plate. Nothing else matters. So I took it up. The experience was overwhelming, was defining actually. And it's something that I genuinely enjoyed. Would do it again if I could. And again, I work, living in the city and working for a restaurant in the city, it just molds you. It just makes you who you are, and it changes your perspective. It changes who you are, and it changed me completely as a person. It developed me into a better chef. Oh, not a better chef, a better cook. It helped me develop like empathy for my peers. It helped me develop a sense of urgency. It definitely made me, you know, put me on my feet. It made me think twice before I did anything. Perfection cuts at all times. Perfect seasoning has to be well balanced at all times. We had to make our sous chefs taste, and then we would actually keep practicing tasting that very same dressings, the same sauce over and over again to see if it matches the palate spectrum from the first taste to the 17th taste. So it just defined who I was as a cook. So all those years of training at Danielle, at the CIA, came to fruition at Gramercy Tavern. And when you're there, you're family. I've eaten there multiple times. I've even eaten there after coming back to CIA for Khalsa and going there. It shows what a small world we live in. And once you're there, you're family. And it just brought me closer to the entire GT spectrum. Oh, and I got to meet Danny Meyer. So, yeah.
One guy from the hospitality world I influenced the most. He is a rock star of hospitality industry. No more externship question. We were talking about science. We got really deep into it.
Yeah.
Okay. So after the GT OPT, you decided to come back to CIA, pursue correct. Your degree further into culinary science.
Mm-hmm.
So why culinary science?
So culinary science is a blend of culinary arts and food science. It's as a culinary scientist, you're bringing your AOS degree or your AOS skills with you and applying it on science units or on a science perspective and thinking on a microscopic level as to how food would change if I change one variation. If I add in another variable, how would the final product be? So culinary science doesn't come under food science per se. It's definitely a subunit of a representation of food science, but more on the hands-on perspective of food science. Like, you definitely get into microecology of food, research methods, you get into senior thesis, understanding the basic fundamental concepts of food making, food technology, food processing, research and development. And it lets you think on your own spectrum, like, is this something I want to take up? if food is like this, what would it be on a macroscopic point of view or on a microscopic level? Like, restaurants are definitely small scale. They definitely feed a smaller spectrum of people, of customers. When you think about Coca-Cola, or you think about Pepsi, or you think about Heinz, you think about Meyer's mayonnaise, you definitely think about the world. You definitely think about a major, bigger clientele or a different spectrum to feed. So culinary science lets you widen your horizon in the science of food. You think as a scientist, but you work as a chef, and you apply all those science principles into getting the right product, the consistent product at the end. I mean, there are various, there's a lot of scope in culinary science. You can get into product sourcing. You can get into understanding the fundamentals of food. You can get into research and development. That would come under research and development. You can get into flavor technologist, flavor science, a research technician. You can get into quality assurance. You can get into HACCP certification. And we do HACCP certification over here at the CIA through the course. So there are various streams you can get into. But I took it up because I wanted to do something more with food. Like, I want to see different flavor profiles. I want to reach out to a bigger market, see why Pepsi is still the same on each continent, why Coca-Cola has the same product for years and it's not changed its recipe since the beginning of its origin. So as a culinary scientist, it makes you think, how would you change food on from your table to a manufacturing unit, to an industry, till it finally reaches a customer's cart? You could get into microwave meals or ready-to-eat meals and think, hey, if I were to eat this dish on my own over here, how would I convert this one plate on a shelf? And then you think about preservation, you think about the processing unit, you think about manufacturing, you think about industrial concepts. And that's what culinary science does for you. We definitely get heavy on science. You read a lot of science articles over here. You have to know your basics. You have to get in deep with readings. And culinary science definitely develops that in you. It's definitely crunched in all semesters, but it infuses that sense of a scientist, but also as a chef at the same time.
Okay, because why I asked you this question, because I was curious that, you know, many people in different parts of the world, especially in India, we don't have something called as culinary science program. We do have mm-hmm. culinary arts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if someone wants to be in your shoe and then be in your place and take up culinary science, so this information can really be helpful for, mm-hmm. because I'm sure being a scientist of anything is not easy.
Yeah,
and especially when it comes to food, because food itself is so complicated. The more you go into it, the more you are amazed. And because I got plenty of curious questions for you today, which make you go crazy,
sure.
which make me sound nuts to you. But it's all curious question. Like, I'm a kindergarten kid when it comes to food. I love gaining the knowledge. So coming to the scientific question, I have one very generic question. So, which is the one ingredient you had a hard time working with in kitchen?
One ingredient that I had a hard time working with?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to sound cheesy, but it's salt.
Salt?
Yeah.
Mine is going to sound more cheesier.
What is it?
It's egg.
Oh.
I know. There are 101 ways to prepare an egg.
I mean, the pleats on your chef hat define how many ways you can cook an egg.
Exactly. But as a chef, I want to know what came first, egg or chicken?
Okay, so I'll just finish off that question as to why I chose salt and then go on to that tacky question, what came first, egg or the chicken?
Yes.
So it's really easy to mess up food when it comes to its seasoning. And salt is taken for granted. And there's so many types of salt in the world right now. One for curing, one for seasoning, one for preservation. It's taken for granted. and hence it needs to be respected and appreciated the most in any kitchen, in any concept. So you can easily mess up with seasoning, you can easily mess up with salt. Hence, you need to give it that amount of respect at all times. So a pinch, or whether if it's a handful, know how much you need to use when it comes to salt, because that's usually what makes or breaks your dish. Second, what came first, egg or chicken? I will say, on an evolutionary standpoint, eggs are much more older than chickens. I mean, think about it. Dinosaurs laid eggs. The fish that first crawled out of the sea laid eggs. The monsters that swam in the shallow seas 500 million years ago also laid eggs. They weren't technically chicken eggs, but they were still eggs. So the very first chicken, I think, in existence would have been in, like, because of a genetic mutation or multiple mutations that took place in a zygote produced by two similar birds of the chicken species, of proto-chickens. So two proto-chickens mated, combining their DNA together, and they formed the very first cell of the first chicken. So as evolution went on, as the years went on, genetic mutations occurred in the very first cell, and they copied the genes copied themselves in each cell, and the chicken came out first. So if you look at it on an evolutionary standpoint, the egg came first, then which gave way to the genetically mutated chicken, and then the chicken came first before the chicken egg. So at the end of the day, the question is something of a false dichotomy. Eggs definitely came before chickens, but chicken eggs did not. So eggs, chicken egg. Does that answer your question?
It definitely answers question. My question. Yes, it does answer my tacky question. Next question is also about egg.
Oh God.
Yes, there is so much of egg gonna happen.
Mm-hmm.
Is egg vegetarian?
I just knew this was coming, but sure. Sure. So the definition of vegetarian is as a diet, it excludes consumption of animal flesh or dead meat or anything from the product of a animal that hurts it, basically. So depending on culture, eggs are vegetarian, at least over here. And in most European countries, egg is considered veg. And for some reason, fish is also considered like a Lent item. So they're technically not animal flesh, the meat, the muscle, the tissue of an animal. Many vegetarians usually like include eggs in their diet, and they abstain from eating other animals. So according to terminology, those people who eat an egg while also being vegetarian are over vegetarian. On a fertilization standpoint of view, and what you're eating is an unfertilized zygote of an egg, so it is vegetarian. But that egg did have the possibility of becoming a chicken if it had been fertilized. So it's definitely not vegan, but mm-hmm. in certain cultures in India, it's a product of a live animal. Hence, it's like, from which a chick comes out, or a young one of a hen comes out, your chicken comes out. So in that perception, it's considered non-vegetarian. So it really depends on the culture. It really depends on where you are that defines egg as vegetarian or non-vegetarian.
That justifies for an egg being a vegetarian, and that answers my question. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
My next question about the science of food. So, you know, we being the cooks and the culinary arts student mm-hmm. in the kitchen, we have mm-hmm. worked with so many different types of herbs, parsley, mm-hmm. dill, rosemary, thyme, mm-hmm. cilantro, coriander. But sometimes, you know, when you get them in the kitchen and you smell mm-hmm. them, it mm-hmm. actually does not smell leafy. It does not smell like it has been plucked from the soil, but mm-hmm. rather it's some herbs like cilantro. It smells mm-hmm. like soap.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Why soap smell happens in the some leafy vegetables like cilantro?
So cilantro smells and tastes like soap because it's a small subsection of that population that deals with the genetic issue when it comes to understanding cilantro and why it tastes soapy or why it smells soapy. So these people, the small percentage of the population, have a variation in the group of olfactory receptor genes that allows them to, like, you know, strongly perceive the soapy flavored aldehydes in cilantro leaves. So this, I don't know if I'm getting this correct, but the aldehyde term is OR. So the receptor gene is called OR6A2 or 3 that usually picks up the smell of aldehyde that's usually found in cilantro and in perfumey soaps or soapy chemicals. And aldehyde is also found in both the units. So because of the genetic issue in certain people, they find cilantro as soapy.
Yeah, this also answers my question. Mr. Abhijit Kamath, tell me, how was your fresh class while you were an associate student in culinary arts program?
It was definitely freezing. Okay. It was at freezing temperature early in the morning. But an elaborate experience or elaborate visualization of all kinds of produce or, you know, the organisms, and it just shows how unique fish is, how unique shellfish, mollusks, all these items, the fruit of the ocean that you can get, and how enjoyable it can be while fabricating and cooking it.
You know, you must be wondering why I asked you about your fish class.
Because I think I know where you're going with this question right now. I really do. I'm dreading it, but let's go with it.
Because my next question about being curious science student is, why do fish smell so bad?
God.
Why? You enter a room of fish and it smells like you are about to throw up. Why
Yes.
is that?
I mean, bad fish tends to make you throw up because of its smell, because it's decomposing. When you think about fish freshly caught from the ocean, they usually don't smell that much. But once they start decomposing, bacteria and other microorganisms start to work on it. So from the research I've done so far about, like, in fish class and in understanding the spectrum of fish, in order to maintain their balance, to fill their cells with amino acids and amines to, like, counteract with the saltiness in seawater, they tend to rely on this one oxide called this amine called trimethyl amine oxide, which is also called TMAO, for this purpose. So once you kill a fish, bacteria again start decomposing on it or start acting on it. So this trimethyl amine oxide gets converted into trimethyl amine TMA, which gives off that, you know, that fishy, vomity smeller. It smells like as if it's puke, basically. It smells mm-hmm. fishy. You get that amine-y, salty flavor. Good fish never smells like that. So you can get rid of it, actually, by either adding acid to it, which again converts the trimethylamine to oxide, and just washes it. And you can either wash it away with just water, but the best way is usually with acid. So if you think about why fish smells fishy, it's definitely something to do with the functional group of trimethylamine oxide, which just decomposes into trimethylamine because of bacteria decomposing the fish.
Okay, that sounds very informative, and I'm gonna keep that thing in mind, that why my fish smells fish.
Yeah.
So besides having the love for Indian food, which is one cuisine you would like to add into your life and you will cherish all your life?
Mm-hmm. So something I would genuinely would want to be influenced by, or actually am already influenced by, is this generic term, American cuisine. Okay. Now, when you think about American cuisine, it definitely takes into North America, Central and South America. So definitely Peruvian cuisine, Chilean cuisine, Argentinian cuisine. Then you move on to, like, you know, Puerto Rico, Caribbean cuisine, and then finally American cuisine, like from USA. Mm-hmm. So all the dishes, all the items that you find in these countries, it has definitely influenced me majorly. I have worked with a lot of, like, you know, French, Italian, Spanish cuisines while working back in India and in the city. But American cuisine is something I genuinely want to take up and genuinely want to study further.
Okay. So, you know, why I asked you this question, because I was in Cuisines of America Correct. Class recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I figured out that, you know, the American, like the whole continent, be it North America and South America, they use a lot of beans into their cuisine. Fava beans, soya beans. I mean,
black beans, kidney beans.
Black beans, kidney beans. I mean, kidney beans even we use back in our own cuisine, rajma chawal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Mr. Scientist, my next question is, when I made beans and I consumed beans, I felt gastric. I felt like, you know, leaving all the carbon dioxide out of my body.
Yeah.
So why?
That's one way.
That's one way, yes. But why, after eating beans, we feel so gastric and we feel like farting so hard?
Yeah, you promised your listeners it was going to be dirty. So sure.
It is getting dirty.
Yeah, so might as well add some sound to it. So the question is, why do beans make us fart? I mean, when you think about cabbage or broccoli or even Brussels sprouts, they all make us fart. Leafy green vegetables, for that matter. So all these items, all these produce items contain this one carb called raffinose. So in our body, we lack this enzyme called, like, if I'm pronouncing this right, alpha galactosidase in the human digestive tract. So it's just supposed to be present for digesting raffinose. So our body isn't adapted to digesting this. We don't have that enzyme that helps us degrade raffinose. Hence, it's poorly digested. So what happens with raffinose is it passes through the stomach to the small intestine undigested. And then I believe it enters the large intestine, where it's fermented by gut bacteria, which is present in every gut. What happens is the byproducts of fermented raffinose is the production of gases like methane, hydrogen, carbon dioxide, that makes you feel bloated and makes you want to fart more. So that is why beans, Brussels sprouts, they all make us fart, because of that one compound called raffinose. It's a non-digestible carbohydrate. It just passes through the body as a fart.
I mean, isn't it so wonderful that a thing that looks so beautiful on plate can have such a disastrous and smelly ending at the end of the day?
I mean, it was the ghost of your food. So, I mean, it's a beautiful notion.
It's a beautiful notion.
And a disgusting one, but sure.
Exactly. Well, thank you for answering all those my tacky and idiotic science questions.
Hey,
thank you, Mr. Sheldon Cooper of food industry.
I don't think Sheldon Cooper is a good name to give me, but sure, I'll take it. I'll take it as a compliment. Thank you.
Yeah, or maybe the male version of Martha Stewart.
Oh my God. Sure. Okay. I'll take whatever you can give me. Sure.
Okay. I think Senpai Abe is the best name to give you.
Oh, you got that from my Instagram too?
Yes. Yes.
Just acting my age.
Okay. So I hope you have enjoyed the podcast so far.
Absolutely. I mean, one of my first podcasts ever, and I'm honored that you invited me over it, and I want to thank you and all your listeners for tuning in.
I'm so thankful to you for accepting this poor man's request of being a wonderful guest on my podcast. It's an absolute honor for me as well that I'm talking to such a knowledgeable and intellectual person.
Yes, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
So, my next question won't be about science, because enough of science and
science. I came here for science. Come on.
I mean, we talked so much about science.
I'm
pretty sure people might have got bored.
Yes.
For now, let's keep it cool with the science.
Sure. Okay.
So my next question about, especially the professional life. Mm-hmm. What's that one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
One thing? I mean, I wish I had known a lot of things before, you know, taking up this as a career. But one thing I definitely did what I wanted to know back then was that, you know, passion and this career that I'm taking up has subsections. Like, what I mean to say is your passion is food, but food has so many directions and paths that, you know, that you feel like you want to take, that it's ever changing. Like, sometimes you feel like you want to get into food photography. Sometimes you want to be a line cook. Maybe you want to get to the scientist, the science perspective of food. So one thing I wish I knew back then was this road is definitely confusing for some people. It was definitely confusing for me. I wish I knew it back then, but I wish I had known what straight path I wanted to take back then. Like, you know, I just want to be a line cook my entire life and I'm going to be happy doing that. I'm going to open my own restaurant and that's something I want to do for the rest of my life. I wish I had known that things change, perception changes, opinions change, your personal knowledge changes. And today I'm trying to be a culinary scientist and I'm really trying to get into research and development in West Coast right now and taking that as a career. So you see how my life changed from being a hardcore line cook, just being as a line cook mindset, to becoming a culinary scientist and a research and development chef. So I wish I had known back then that I shouldn't be like, you know, stuck up on being just choosing one line of food, but definitely opening up to different avenues of food. And I strongly urge your listeners, whoever's interested in, you know, or genuinely passionate about food, be open to different spectrums of food. Definitely be open to different variations of food or food careers. Don't be hellbent on just being that one thing. You might just find more happiness in your next turn or the next road you take. So yeah, keep an open mind.
So as we go on to this question that what was the one thing you learned, and you learned quite a thing before after entering the industry and being a professional. Mm-hmm. So my one personal question, it can be really deep and dark.
Mm-hmm.
Are you satisfied with the thing you have taken, and are you excited for the next what comes next to you?
Well, again, am I satisfied? Yes. Am I happy? Yes. But I don't think happiness or satisfaction is a destination. It's definitely a journey. Like, whatever decision you make either brings you happiness or unhappiness, or brings you unsatisfactory results, or maybe satisfies your decision to take that. It generally depends on the road you take. And if you're not happy, definitely change your view, change your road. Am I satisfied? No. And what means do I mean that? Is I want more. I still want to do more with everything, with just food. Like, you know, I'm unsatisfied in that way. You have to be foolish. You have to stay hungry, as Steve Jobs would say. You can't be satisfied with just knowing what you know and just working on it. You have to keep knowing more and understanding more and working on it to develop more, to grow more. You're never going to be satisfied with just understanding one spectrum of food. You're going to lift up more avenues. You're going to bring about more changes, more growth by being unsatisfied and just trying to be happy or finding happiness in that journey you take, whatever decision you take.
So Abhijit, you know, we as professionals, especially being in kitchen, it's such a mentally and physically straining job.
True.
And we come to a point that, you know, we feel like quitting it. I had mm-hmm. that point of, I had that thought at one point mm-hmm. of time that, you know, I should mm-hmm. be, it's not a cup of mm-hmm. tea for me.
Mm-hmm.
But my parents, so has it happened with you that you came to a point of life in kitchen that you felt like, no, it's not a thing for me?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's called a point of saturation where you just can't take it anymore. Your back is against the wall. There's nowhere else to go. And the walls are closing in. Yeah, absolutely. Everyone is going to go through it. Mm-hmm. You've experienced this. I've experienced it. Everyone at one point of their life, regardless of whether they're way down the road or early in the road, they will experience it. I've experienced it, and you will come out of it. There's this, I think it's a Jewish saying or something in the Bible, I think verse 17 or 14, that says, this too shall pass. What it means to say is, it's just temporary. Whatever you're going through, whatever pain or suffering, or even happiness for that matter, everything is temporary. So enjoy it while you can. I'm sure you reached your point of saturation where you started doubting yourself, like, is this the career I want? Is this something that makes me happy? You chose to stick for it. And today, I'm guessing you're in a happy place. I mean, at least you're happy with the decision you took.
Oh, definitely. I'm very happy. And I'm going to stick to the profession I took till the last till the last day my body allows me to work in kitchen.
Absolutely. That's the same thing. So for those, like, if you're not happy, move to something else. See if that brings you happiness. And when you look back and you compare the two things, did the first choice give you more happiness, or did the second choice give you more happiness? And are you happy with that decision? See, life isn't about just, you know, just staying put. It's definitely about finding different things that bring meaning. So when you're down, you will get out of it. It's definitely just a distraction. It's definitely an upside down turn for you. It's a loop. So make a decision that makes you happy is what I would say. Choose something that would make you happy. For me, I personally did have a rough time in one of the places I worked back in India. And I started contemplating, like, is this something I really want to do? But then again, just like your parents, my mom and dad sat me down and made me rethink everything. Like, hey, is this something you want to do? And they encouraged me, like, you know, food was always in you since the beginning. You were never meant to be an engineer. You were never meant to be a doctor. Instead, down the line, you might be something else. And from being a line cook, I became a culinary scientist. So it's all about staying put, in the sense you're standing your ground. If it brings you happiness, take it up. If you're at a spot where you can't move, get out, in the sense, make another decision and see if that brings you happiness. And everything will fall in place eventually. Just gotta, like, you know, not give up hope. Just have the faith.
I mean, you know, for that matter of fact, I would like to make a statement. It's actually a quote from a very famous movie, Ratatouille. Anyone can cook, but only the fearless can be the great.
Yep. Inspirational movie of my time. I think 2007.
Really,
yeah.
What your time? We belong to the same generation.
Yep.
So, you mentioned that, you know, your parents supported you through the rough down all of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So, should I consider that your parents have been the most influential people when it comes to backing up for what you had chosen as a career?
Absolutely. No doubt about that. You just answered your own question. Yeah. The reason I am here today speaking to you in whatever tone or whatever condition I'm in is because of my parents. They built me from scratch. They made me think for who I am, you know, to, like, build myself to after a certain extent, and made me what I am today. Without my dad's helping hand, my mom's upbringing, I would never be in this position or in seat to talk to you that way. But eventually, you got to make your own decisions. Like, you know, you got to make your own choices, and that molds you. But they'll always be there. They were always there. They are always there to guide me. And, you know, they make me question my methods and see if there's any fruit to doing that. What is your outcome? Like, what is the choice you've made, whether it's the right choice or the wrong choice? So they've always been there. They've been my guardian angels. They've always had a helping, I'm not a believer of God. I'm not an atheist either. But if one physical form of God I do have, are my parents. A physical form of something, a higher power I can believe in, knowing that they've always been there and always held my hand, whether in good times or bad. Those, my parents, are the best representation I can give of a higher power. Yeah.
I mean, you made everyone emotional today with that answer. No. So, you know, when, you know, we always talk to our parents when we are away from them on the daily basis. I'm sure you would too. I do to my parents. So, when it comes to sharing secrets, whom do you approach? Your mom or your dad? I approach my mom because I'm a mama's boy.
It depends on the secret. If it's a big secret, I approach my younger sister. I'll tell you one thing. My younger sister, being 21, is definitely much more mature than I am. And she has a knack for life than I ever did at that age. So if it comes to being logical, thinking straight, and thinking on a neutral standpoint, definitely my sister. So depending on the secret, but if not my sister, definitely, you know, I turn in my mama's boy spectrum, my knob, and I tell my mother more than my dad.
I told you, we are brothers. We got separated as kids. We have so much in common.
Sure.
Okay. So, you know, I have asked you so many questions. I hope I did not drive you crazy so far.
No. I need more questions, please. I want to answer all your questions. Go ahead.
Okay. So, if you could step into my shoes, what you have asked yourself that I did not?
Damn. That's a emotional question, actually. If I think about it, I mean, this is going to be a tricky answer, but I hope you can just be patient with me. If I were in your shoes asking me a personal question, I would actually have variations of me at the age of 5, 10, 15, and 20, 25. And all those variations of Abhijit would ask me one at a time, in ascending order, are you happy? And were you that person to other people when I needed you at that age? And at the age of 27, right now, sitting with them, I would answer it. Like, are you happy? Did I do justice to the people around me who needed that person who I needed when I was at that age? Was I that person for them? And that is something I definitely would ask myself in your shoes.
I mean, that's a wonderful question to ask. I mean, you should always look deep down into yourself, and you should sometimes ask the questions which people might not even think to ask. Am I doing it right? Yes. Am I happy? Yes.
Yeah.
Am I keeping my parents happy? Am I keeping the people around me happy? Definitely yes.
Yeah.
Am I keeping myself happy? Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, you can't be selfish all the time. Like, you know, you have to ask yourself, am I making myself happy? Yes. But am I hurting someone else in the process? Am I pushing someone down the ditch just to climb up the ladder? Am I hurting someone else based on this decision? And if so, what am I going to do about it? Am I still going to be selfish? Am I going to work on it? Or am I going to find mutual understanding or mutual ways to like fix it? So that's something I really want to stress on. Like, you know, am I happy? And am I doing something? Whatever I'm doing, am I making others happy? In the sense that, you know, am I not selfish? And I'm not hurting someone in the process of whatever decisions I take. Am I working with them, for them, or against them purposefully and not intentionally hurting them?
Exactly. So, you know, as we come to the end of the first segment of our podcast, I just have two more questions for
you. Sure, yeah.
One, a few tips that you would like to give it to the upcoming generation getting into the hospitality, food, and culinary science world. And if they want to reach out to you, where they can reach you at.
Sure. Two tips, right?
You can go with more tips.
I mean, if you reach out to me, I could definitely give you more. So two tips you need. One tip I would definitely give to the generation coming in, like, you know, just coming into hospitality or CIA, is that be ready to change. Change is inevitable. your entire world is going to change, and be accepting. Accept that you're not going to be the same what you were at the initial stage of CIA, and you're going to be different at the final stage. And you're going to change even more once you go back into the industry and work for it. So definitely do your research, definitely accept change, and just receive and just accept what it is, but make sure you change for the better. Make sure you change for good. That's one tip. So accept change. Number two, if you're really passionate about food, definitely come to the CIA. If you're passionate about anything, do it. If you just want to cook and you just think treat it like a hobby, I mean, stay at home, cook in your own kitchen, and start a small scale business and develop on that, hone like a home skill. But if you're willing to suffer, if you're ready to like let your passion kill you, and you're willing to suffer for it, then join this industry. Because there's the saying, find your passion and let it kill you, which means that you have to be ready to suffer for the decision you chose for this labor of love. Because cooking, and at least working in a restaurant, is a labor of love. You want to be hospitable. You want to treat people well. You want to cook the best food. It all comes at a price. So you guys are young. Take it up. Be passionate. Be willing to suffer, but also be willing to like receive the fruits at the end. And you will change. Everything changed for me initially. Everything changed after, and it's still changing. So tip number one, accept change, and accept change for good. Number two, be passionate about what you do and be ready to suffer. And by suffer is a really like a overstatement, but what I mean to say is be ready to receive everything that comes with this career, with this choice of labor, and you will find happiness if you're happy with the decision you made.
So yeah, I mean, that's a very beautiful tips to conclude the first segment of my podcast, the Q&A segment. And I'm so thankful to you once again for answering all my questions with such a patience and such a grace.
Thank you.
But now we are entering into the next segment of the podcast where people tend to fumble and get confused, and that is a small rapid fire round.
Yeah, I might just choke you after this podcast. Yeah, you might not regain consciousness for another hour once this podcast is over. But yeah, sure, go on.
Okay. So my first question for the rapid fire round, your biggest professional influence?
My biggest professional influence.
You got 30 seconds. You have to go straight up.
Myself.
Okay. Four adjectives that describe your cooking style.
Crazy, sexy, weird, and unusual, tasty, but perky.
Favorite cookbook?
Devil in the Kitchen by Marco Pierre White. And I think Apple Pie by Gordon Ramsay.
Okay.
Yeah, his autobiography.
Okay. Favorite ingredient?
Coconut oil.
Coming from a South Indian, I should have thought of. Utensils you can't live without other than your knives?
Oh my God, I was going to say my chef knife, but my honing rod.
Okay. Trend you want to see in the industry?
Where microwave meals or ready-to-eat meals aren't, have got some slack. They aren't looked down upon. Definitely more nutritious, definitely consistent, and people have a better opinion about them. Definitely it relies on the manufacturers. A trend I definitely want to see with microwave foods as being the next nutritious, most upcoming healthy meals of the century.
Okay. Favorite thing to make in kitchen?
Favorite thing to make in kitchen? Chai.
Chai?
Okay. Yes. And not chai tea latte.
Yes.
Not chai tea. Not chai tea latte, it's chai.
Okay, if you have to open up your own restaurant and you have to plan your own menu, which is one particular dish you would love to keep it throughout the year?
My Konkan Ambat, and snapper fry.
New ingredient you are presently playing with?
Definitely hydrocolloids. So hydrocolloids is a wider spectrum for like think xanthan gum, agar agar, pectin gel, HML, LMH, all these powders and these ingredients that stabilize or, you know, reverse fear ingredients and make it more scientific, make food more scientific. So definitely the applications of these ingredients.
Okay. What would you like to see more of in the kitchen?
I would like to see tradition in the kitchen, the usual tradition in the kitchen evolve. Mm-hmm. And definitely be more accepting of different styles of cooking, different techniques used to get the same product. And I definitely want to see our culture, our traditions as a chef change for the better, more accepting of science.
Chef you have learned the most from?
Chef I have learned the most from? Definitely my chef from IHM, mm-hmm. Chef Vernon Coelho. He influenced me my entire IHM years. He's no longer with us, and I couldn't attend his funeral in 2020. But he was definitely with me during IHM, after he retired, and always stood by me, always made me, you know, helped me make the right choice. He even came to like wish me goodbye when I left for CIA. So he's a very busy, he's a celebrity chef. He's trained so many Michelin star chefs back in India who've like moved on to different projects. And he was one of the most influential chefs of my life, professional chefs of my life.
If you were not a chef, you would be?
A lawyer. Definitely a lawyer. Yeah.
I mean, you are justifying food. That's no less than being a lawyer.
Plus, I like to argue.
I mean, yes. There's so many arguments going in the food industry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The last question for the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Where does Abhijit Kamat see himself 5 years from now?
Where do I see myself 5 years from now? Well, I definitely see myself in a better position, definitely in a happier position, definitely satisfied with what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Happy and content with whatever I've taken up, because again, money isn't an issue for me. I've really never run behind money. It's about work satisfaction, life satisfaction, mental health satisfaction. Mm-hmm. And that is something I would like to see myself have more of in the future, at least 5 years or maybe even 10 years down the line. Just content, being happy with what I do, what I have, and whatever I take up. Just seeking the right decisions and being happy with whatever I've decided to do. Everything else will follow.
I mean, definitely. So with that, we have come to the end of this wonderful session of the podcast. And I, again, am so thankful to you for being such a good patient guest and answering all my questions on a repetitive
Absolutely.
Mode. I'm so honored
Thank you for
to have you.
Thank you for having me. It's been an honor. Trust me, it's been good to open up, and definitely to your listeners, if you ever need to reach out to me, you can always reach out to me via my Instagram, apetrovert or Abhijit Kamat. Mm-hmm. And yeah, any questions about the industry, the CIA, any questions about Ajay, definitely, yeah, reach out
to me. He's the man to reach, yes.
Yeah, but anything, just even about career questions, anything about CIA, anything even about what you need to do in about the future, what decisions mm-hmm. you need to make, you can reach out to me on Instagram. Yeah.
And for me, it's been an absolute pleasure to host you on today's episode, because you graduate in 2 months' time and you graduate in August.
Yeah.
And I wish you all the best for your life and for
you,
your career.
And, yeah, absolutely.
And with that, guys, we have come to the end of this such a wonderful podcast. Signing off for today, your lovely host, Ajay Sharma. Thank you.